This is a podcast from the University of Manchester's Jodl Bank Centre for Astrophysics. For more information, see jodcast.net.
Joining me on the Jodcast is Alejo Martinez Sansigue. He's from the Institute of Cosmology at the University of Portsmouth, and his research topic is high redshift quasars.
Hi, good morning.
Thank you for joining us on the Jodcast and being interviewed today.
Thanks for having me around.
So, what is a quasar and how high redshift are we thinking about?
So a quasar is a supermassive black hole, and by supermassive we mean that this black hole has a mass of about a million to a billion times that of our own sun. And there's one of these black holes in the center of every galaxy. But for a long period of time, they don't have a lot of activity around them, and so we don't see them as quasars. However, when a lot of gas and dust is near the black hole, it will start falling in, and it will get very hot. And when it gets hot, it will emit a lot of radiation. Just like a pan gets red hot, this material emits depending on what the temperature is. And if you're lucky and you can see this region, which is very hot, then you will see a lot of blue light, a lot of UV, ultraviolet light, also infrared. However, on the outside, it's not so hot. So a bit further away from the black hole, this gas will be relatively cool. And actually, you can form dust. And this dust absorbs the optical and ultraviolet light. And so depending if you happen to have a clear view to the central very, very hot bit, or whether your line of sight is blocked by this dust, then actually your quasar, so the black hole that is growing by eating a lot of material, will actually be obscured by the dust.
So is this dust in orbit around the black hole?
It's a little bit further out than what we would call orbit, but it might eventually make it. It's quite a long time scale for it to fall in, but it's certainly in the outskirts of a black hole, in the central region of a galaxy.
And these quasars, can you see them all across the sky? Are they close by to us? Are they a long way?
They seem to be rare in the present-day universe. So it's actually easier to find them in the past when the universe was smaller. So that's what we see as a redshift effect. It's actually easier to find them a little bit further out. So typically we find them at large distances, which is actually equivalent to looking in the past.
So would our own galaxy have gone through this stage, for instance?
Yes, we think so. Because the black hole in our galaxy is a little bit smaller than some of these, so it's only a million solar masses compared to a billion, it sounds small, then it wouldn't have been one of the most powerful quasars, one of the brightest ones, but I think it probably did undergo such a phase. So at some stage, it probably was a very bright source.
And the most powerful quasars are the ones with the biggest supermassive black hole in the centre? Or do they go through stages, or can they evolve?
Yes, we think you're right that the most powerful quasars will have the biggest black holes in the centre, because the maximum power that you can develop is related to the black hole mass. However, if you don't have any material to fall in, then there's no material to get hot and to emit light. So you can have a very big black hole that is not very active, and then it's difficult to detect. So it's both the black hole mass, but also how much fuel is available.
And all this fuel comes from, is it just when the universe formed?
Yeah, so it's fuel that is in the host galaxy. So when the galaxy was dustier or more gaseous, so in an early phase, basically this gas and dust is also the fuel for star formation. So when the galaxy was forming and had more fuel for star formation, more gas, more dust, then also it would have had probably more fuel for the black hole to eat. So they might go hand in hand.
So it's an exciting time now for this, with the newer telescopes of ALMA being commissioned. So how will ALMA revolutionise your research?
Well, ALMA is very good at studying dust and gas, what we just explained. The dust that is not very hot emits at the wavelengths that ALMA can study. And the gas that forms new stars is, or a fraction of it, is in a molecular phase. So it's cold enough that molecules have formed. And those molecules you can study again with ALMA. So this telescope is ideal for studying both the dust and the gas in early galaxies and at high redshift, so when the universe was younger. So it's a fantastic instrument.
So you hopefully get some time on there.
We'll hopefully get some observations with it.
Yeah. And study these cold dust disks around quasars.
Exactly, yeah. And their host galaxies as well.
And their host galaxies.
Yes.
And what can you infer from studying this cold dust?
We can, for example, measure the temperature of this dust. We can estimate what the mass is, how much of it there is. So we can have an estimate of the total mass available for star formation, for feeding the black hole, both from the dust and the gas. And if you have good enough data, and I think this is where in the distant universe we need things like ALMA. Currently it's a bit difficult to do this. You can infer different phases. So that means you might be able to spot a region of hot gas as well as colder gas, and that they might have different masses and they might occupy different regions of the galaxy. And with good enough data, you can start seeing this. So you can start kind of peeling the layers of the onion, if you want. You can start seeing how the galaxy and the black hole work.
And previous to this, you couldn't see beyond that first layer of dust?
Previously, except in very rare cases, you normally just see the average. So you can't tell the different phases. You just see a typical value for the host galaxy, a typical value for the quasar. But actually, this typical value is really a mixture of things. If you looked at the Earth from very far away, it might just look blue. Or if you look at a continent from far away, it might look brown or green. And until you look a bit more closer, you might not start seeing that there are oceans, that there are forests, and there are mountains.
This lets you see a whole detailed picture of all the different things going on around these quasars.
Yes, absolutely.
And it should be very, very exciting stuff, so all the things you can determine. How does a quasar switch on if there's all this dust around in the initial galaxy to start off with?
That's a good question. How the first quasars switched on is a very interesting problem. We think the physics is similar, so if there's gas and there's a big black hole, then the gas will start falling in and getting hot. But a very good question is, how early can we see them? And surprisingly, we see them extremely early, when the universe was only maybe 800 million years old. Now that sounds pretty old by human standards, but you have to remember, you have to grow this thing to be a million or even a billion times the mass of our own sun. And so to have that so early in the universe is a very intriguing observation. So why or how did they grow so quickly, so early?
Because all this matter comes from stars, and I guess the end of a stellar lifetime, like the dust, for instance, comes from that. So,
well, that's
that all
a good
there...
question. We don't actually know how these supermassive black holes form originally. Maybe they form from a star, like you'd said, a dead star, in which case the seed of the black hole should be relatively small, only 10 or 100 times the mass of our sun. Remember, this thing has to grow up to a million or a billion times. It does grow exponentially, but it still needs some time to grow. So why or how these things are formed so early is an important question that hasn't been answered yet.
Are there any leading ideas in this field?
I think the observations are at a point where you can just about get away with forming these from a stellar mass black hole. Because we've observed them at when the universe was about 800 million years old, that's just about enough time to form them from a relatively small seed, like from a star. But if we find them at slightly early epochs, then that will be very difficult to explain, because there will just won't be enough time for them to grow. So I think right now you can't rule out either camp from the observations. I think maybe soon we will have to rule out some of them if we find some very high redshift quasars.
And so in the local universe, so coming a lot closer, all these supermassive black holes have eaten up all their fuel and then stopped being quasars. So this is why you have to look so far back in time when they've got a lot of stuff surrounding them.
We think so, yes. We think that's probably the explanation why there are fewer of them in the present day universe. In the local universe, there are a lot of big black holes, but they don't seem to be eating. So yes, the simplest explanation is that they've run out of gas. In fact, very often their host galaxies don't have very much gas. So that, again, agrees with that simple picture.
Thank you very much for joining us on the Jodcast. It's
Thank
been
you
brilliant.
Very much for the interview.
And I hope ALMA opens a new window up for you.
Let's hope so. Thank you very much.